Let's do it.
Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, 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 oh. Oh, yeah. Empowerment Saturday. 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. It's your main man, Marvin Rhone, in a fruit. Coming to you live. We got a great show for you today. We got Dr. Bruce back. Call a friend. It's family time, y'all. Let's roll. Oh, yeah. Welcome to the show. There is no better, no greater love for self. That's me and you, us, and kind. There is no greater love than for self and kind. And that's what African-American empowerment is all about. It's returning, a return to love. That's right. It's a return, a complete 180 back to where we belong. Now, there are some strategies for how we can do this. That strategy from the African-American empowerment perspective is peace. Oh boy, do we need peace. We need it desperately in our communities. We need it in our families. We need it. We know we do, right? Just look around. More importantly, we need it within ourselves first. Because, again, if you're on an airplane, that mask come down, you're going to put yours on first. So I'm asking you, wherever you are right now, put your mask on first, get yourself together, and then try to save somebody else. Why am I talking about this? Because if you look at the history, right, and if you just do some research, and we got Dr. Bruce on here who has done the research. We got Dr. Rogers on here who has done the research. So we got great historians. Current historians that are telling us what we need to know. We're doing a historical narrative of what's been going on and the tools that we need to move forward. So here's a peace concept. We're talking about looking at the mission of the African American Empowerment Association, the National African American Empowerment Association, because we're spreading the word across the country. In every city where we are, we're looking to ensure that the needs of our community members are met. Every other group is doing it. How are we going to do it? Through the development of programs and services that support, inspire, motivate, and empower each member. That's just clear. It's simple, right? If they got Chinatown, why can't we have places that develop and empower our people? We need community centers directly impacting African Americans right where they are. Not cookie cutter programs that fit other people and other cultures, but ones that fit and work for us. To help us to have some boundaries and some tools for engagement. So here's the peace concept. Politics. That's the P. I'm spelling it out. We need a political agenda. I don't say it every week. That political agenda needs to really look at policies, right? And we got educated, smart people who understand the importance of policy. How do we begin to affect and impact policies where we are? Those policies that work for us. That work with us and not against us. So we need a political agenda wherever we are, and we're going to have to organize ourselves to understand American politics, the American political system, and then become effective at navigating that system. E, economics. We need an economic agenda and an economic platform, a national African-American economic agenda and platform that looks at the economy, the African-American economy and how we can turn that economy inward where we can start creating jobs and opportunities for ourselves. We need to understand the system of capitalism and how to become African-American capitalists that capitalize on making sure that we're okay, that we have jobs and opportunities for our youth and our families and our communities where we're not starving, but we're striving, we're improving, and we're growing. Nothing wrong with that. And now the A, it's the most critical one, because without your health and wellness, where would you be? Got to take care of your body and your mind. Your physical health and your mental health is the most important aspect of the concept. You got to have a health, wellness, fitness, and nutrition agenda. And that agenda speaks to taking care of you. And we have to take care of ourselves, right? Many of us are traumatized. We just are, right? How do we then work and navigate through that by creating mental health programs, our people, that help our people heal? Then there's culture, relevant cultural programs, understanding how culture works, and then giving it to our young people and passing it down to the next generation, giving us some boundaries and a roadmap for how we should conduct ourselves in community and in family. Family first, family healing. And again, we're working to understand, to learn, to navigate the system and to heal from the atrocities that's been impacting our people for so long. And then lastly, it's a comprehensive education. A comprehensive education that really looks at all aspects of learning, growth, and development for our children, giving our children everything that they need to compete, but not only to compete, to become excellent at who they are as human beings. And now the Stan Macklin moment.
Man, Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah, man, we got the deck.
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing.
Now, brothers and sisters, those pillars are powerful, and we can't take those pillars for granted, because those pillars, if effectively utilized, will give us the institutional power that we need to insulate and help ourselves heal and grow and develop, right? Those pillars of empowerment, those pillars of peace will do it. We got to do the work of becoming our authentic selves. It's only the opportunity for us to do the work of healing ourselves and unifying and returning to our rightful place.
But we must unify.
Tell them, Stan.
Let's not sabotage ourselves. We should not look as to what we can't do. We can do all things. We can. We can do it. And so we got to quit trying to mimic other races and be who we are, original kings and queens, and make a difference.
I like that.
Right here on earth.
That's the Stan Macklin moment. My brother, co-host for many years, passed away. But those words are critical. Understand who you are. And stop trying to get in and fit in and try to be like other people. And let's return to our greatness. And now it's the Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment with Brother George. Brother George, are you ready? Bringing you in. Here we go. Oh, yeah. Let's do it.
Bring it! What? We right here. We're
Brother
not
George.
Going anywhere. We right here.
George, how are you?
I'm doing fine, brother. I'm doing fine. All praise be to God. I feel great today.
So, before you get started, I want to say this. The Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment is so important foundationally, right? Kwanzaa can do so much for us if we understand the collectiveness of it. But not only that, Brother George is breaking down some knowledge for you, right? Because knowledge is power. And so he's finding these books and he's giving it to us, title, author, and then the rich material that's in it. So let's not take that for granted. Brother George, I'm turning it over to you.
Yes,
thank
sir.
You, brother.
All right. Thank you. Today's Kwanzaa principle is going to be Imani, which is faith, to believe with all our heart in our people, our parents, our teachers, our leaders, and the righteousness and victory of our struggle. And I think that that's, you know, it's really shows a dedication to our people. When you say our people, our parents, our teachers, our leaders, and the righteousness and victory of our struggle, you know. And we need to get that into our minds and really believe in it. Now, today, with the Willie Lynch segment, I'm going to read out of a book that I previously read out of, but it doesn't matter because it's always something new. This is Chains and Images of Psychological Slavery by a good brother, Dr. Naeem Akbar. Let's see. Okay, this is a section on leadership. The slaves were taught to view with suspicion natural heads which emerged from among themselves. In other words, natural leaders, the head of the group. Such heads were identified as uppity or arrogant, and were branded as the kind of troublemakers who were destined to bring trouble to the entire slave community. This idea was reinforced by the public punishment of such indigenous leadership and any of his or her associates or sympathizers. The entire slave community was often required to carry an extra burden or deprived of some small privilege because of such uppity slaves. Such practices rather firmly entrenched the opposition to natural leaders. They were often isolated by their own community and were usually the victims of fellow slave snitches who reported to the master that someone was brewing trouble. The snitches, having demonstrated their loyalty to the master, were usually promoted to the position of slave leader, and another grafted leader was born, and especially with a slave body and master's head or master's mind. The slave community was encouraged to view the greater power given to the master trained leader as an indication of his superior worth as a leader. The master trained leader was rewarded, praised, and given privileges as an inducement for the slaves to follow his leadership. The long generations of being conditioned to reject natural and strong leadership had not only stifled African Americans, still respond by rejecting such leaders. Even outstanding leaders such as Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. were rejected and denied support by the African American educated and professional classes of people in many major cities. He was condemned in the early days of the Civil Rights Campaign as a troublemaker. Only after receiving recognition from increasing numbers of liberal Caucasians was he accepted as a leader. Powerful leaders who emerged from the ranks of the uneducated, such as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, never received wide acceptance, despite the fact that he offered the most powerful economic and self-help program of the time. Contemporary Negro history accounts devote extensive coverage to Muhammad's trainees, such as Malcolm X, while mentioning the natural head only in passing. So we've been conditioned to reject good leadership and to be critical of good leadership that naturally grew up from among us. And anybody that they put in front of us and say, well, this one is okay, he's not a troublemaker, he's going to teach you the right thing, then we'll accept them with no problem. And We got to get out of that. We got to accept who is going to do us the most good. And so, Brother Marvin, that's me for today. And it's back to you, brother.
All right. Thank you, Brother George. Great, great segment. But before you go, what is one thing we could do to get our leadership back into the hands of our great people?
Well, what we need to do is we need to use our minds. Like the brother said in the book last week, we have to really evaluate, like, what's going on with our minds. Who is it? Whose thoughts are we actually thinking? Are we taking the time to evaluate what are the appropriate thoughts that we should be thinking and the appropriate remedies for what it is that we're trying to solve a problem with? And if that leadership comes along and has a great idea of how we can solve that, then we should accept that person as leadership. So we oftentimes, I notice about our people that we feel like that if you don't use my plan, then you don't have the right plan. And so I'm not going to listen to nobody else's plan unless they're going to listen to mine. We ain't going to get nowhere like that. You know, we're going to have to start putting heads together and coming up with, you know, the best idea and the person that can execute it. Then you put that person at the head and we'll follow their leadership. To me, brother, that's how.
I like that. I like that. I like it a lot. We need to get our act together. Thank you, Brother George.
Yes,
who else
sir.
Is going to do it? Who? Will it be you? Will it be me? Will it be us collectively together? Because the truth is that we got so much work to do. And honestly, we don't have time to be divided. It's about our history. It's about our culture, and it's about our education. It's about loving ourselves again. And this is a great, great, great tool right here to begin to create platforms that's going to help us do the work that we need to do for ourselves. Again, it's our faith in ourselves, our faith in each other, our love for one another, love for self. Those are keys. But you got to be able to understand the power of your mind and how those things have been manipulated by a system that continues to do what it's been doing since we were brought here against our will. Now, I have no issues with any other people or race. I don't. But I do have an issue with us, and that issue is improvement. That issue is education. That issue is self-love. That issue is personal empowerment. That issue is developing our families. That issue is helping our children to have confidence in themselves. That issue is bringing you and me to the table to talk about profitable solutions, not only in terms of economics, but how can we profit from our own healing? The profit is being able to have better families and better communities. Nothing wrong with that. It's nothing wrong with doing the work of working on ourselves. So I want you to take the opportunity, if you would, to invest in yourself, to reinvest in our communities, and do the work of working on ourselves. We got Dr. Bruce coming up today. Call a friend. This is African American empowerment, right? This is for our people. This is for the people who have come from Africa against their will and enslaved as chattel, not human beings, but animals. And we've overcome all of that. Now it's time to take the next step. Will you do that with me? Will you do that with Brother George? Will you join forces with myself, Dr. Rogers, Dr. Bruce, and all the other people who come on consistently to say we can do the work? We can do it. We sure can do it. If we do it together, nothing can stop us. Most powerful, most influential, and the change has to come from us first. All right, I'm getting ready to bring Dr. Bruce in. We got a powerful show today. Here we go. Get your pens and pads ready. Call a friend. Dr. Bruce. He's coming, y'all. Bring him.
Bring it. What?
Oh, yeah. Dr. Bruce. We right here. We ain't going to sit here and listen to. We're going to listen to what you got to say today. Welcome to the show. How are you, brother?
Oh, I'm okay, Brother Marvin, and thank you very much for the introduction that you gave and also for the introduction Brother George gave. Whenever you all do the talks before me, it makes me think about so many other things that that I could talk about other than my book today. And one thing I was thinking about, which is good, before we get started into my book on page 81, Recapturing the African Mind, and to those who don't have a copy of my book just yet, you can get a copy of it by just calling me at area code 919-956-5972 and leave me a message, and I'll get your book out in the mail. And if it's a local person, I'll bring it to you. And the reason I mention that, because I called quite a few people today, Brother Marvin, text people about tuning in today. So they may want to get a copy of the book so they can be with us. And you know, you mentioned some things. One thing you mentioned earlier, and that is what Brother George was talking about, leadership. It made me think about quite a number of things in the city in which I live, Durham, North Carolina. And as Dr. Rogers has said many times, he said it Tuesday night, and he says it over and over, it's something about our city of Durham, North Carolina, as it was called by E. Franklin Frazier in his book, The Capital of the Black Bourgeoisie. If people in our community, and I'm talking specifically now to people from Durham, North Carolina, and I want people who are tuned in to call a friend, call some people that you know, or text them and text them the phone number and tell them to tune into this program. But people are very, very, very tribal and very oriented towards people who have their degrees or who look like them or people that they know and that kind of thing. And when it comes to leadership, as Brother George says, what we should do is have the best person among us in our community to be our spokesperson, our people in front, or person in front, whatever the case may be, and whoever can get the job done. That's what needs to happen. And I think about it many times, and I won't go into all that now, but I think about books that have been written, things that have been done in the city of Durham. And see, I'm from the hood. I'm from the hood in Durham, North Carolina, one of the hoods. There's a whole lot of them in Durham. I'm not the members of the upper echelon of Durham, North Carolina, and the upper crust of this city, but I'm from one of the hoods in the city of Durham, from the projects in the city of Durham, one of the projects. And when I was on the radio and when I was speaking out and doing quite a bit, there were people, which I'm not going into all that now, but there were people who were at the so-called university here in Durham, North Carolina, North Carolina Central University, who were tremendously against me and what I was saying and the fact that I was challenging them on certain things and certain teachings and certain pieces of information they were putting out that was incorrect. And so we really need to work on that. So what Brother George said today was right on point in that we definitely need to find the best of us who can articulate it, who has the knowledge, and who knows what we need as a people to be in front and lead. And there's so much that we have to do that there's a place for everybody now. So it's no question about that. So we won't get into that right now, but I can just think about so many things that have gone on, even when it comes to certain positions that are open in the city of Durham. We don't get the best person to do the position, but we get a person in the position who knows this person, mm-hmm. who's a friend of this person, who's from this family, and who's this complexion, and all these kinds of things that are crazy, you see. So, Brother George, don't do that again, because you're getting me all off the subject of my book, which we're about to discuss.
Dr.
Recapturing
Bruce,
the African Mind. But all of this is really about, it's about recapturing the African mind, isn't it?
Exactly.
Because when we get our minds back, we'll realize that we as people have to use the best tools, the best artillery, the best weapons that we have to fight this beast here in the United States of America. We have to use that. Whether we call it critical race theory, black studies, African studies, black history, cultural awareness, whatever we Black Lives Matter, whatever we call it, we definitely need to use all of our weapons to fight against the ignorance that we have in our community. And on page 81 of my book, Recapturing the African Mind, I called certain people, too, in the religious community, some of my former students. I don't know if some of them are online or not. It's a beautiful day, and some people are out and about, and I understand that. But I'm going to talk today basically about the impact of religion and the Bible on the minds of our people. And from page 81, I wanted to start here with a statement from an author by the name of Winthrop Jordan, W-I-N-T-H-R-O-P, to those who might be taking notes. And we ask people who are listening, who are in this class, to get a pen, a pencil, and take notes, and you can write some things down and check it out later. But according to Winthrop Jordan, W-I-N-T-H-R-O-P, Winthrop Jordan, J-O-R-D-A-N, on page 191 of his book, White Over Black, he said about the clergy or the preachers in the African-American community and the white community as well, he said, and I quote him, he said that these clergymen had been forced by the circumstances of racial slavery in America into propagating the gospel by presenting it as an attractive device for slave control. I want to repeat that. He said that these clergymen, talking about Christian preachers, had been forced by the circumstances of racial slavery in America into propagating or pushing the gospel by presenting it as an attractive device for slave control. The Bible, to those who are tuned in, during the time of slavery, when it came to African-American preachers who were trained by white clergymen and white preachers, and most of them were, they propagated the whole idea of control and to make us into better slaves. Now, that's not the only thing that happened. Let me make this very clear. When we talk about real religion here, we can't leave out Nat Turner and what Reverend Nat Turner did. Nat Turner was a preacher, but he was a different kind of preacher. Nat Turner was a preacher. Sister Harriet Tubman was a preacher. Brother Gabriel Prosser was a preacher who led that revolt up in Virginia. Enrico in Virginia, Richmond, Virginia. Gabriel Prosser was a preacher. Also, Denmark Beasley from down in South Carolina, who led a slave revolt. These were preachers. That's not the kind of religion I'm talking about that was being used by the clergymen in America. Now, I'm back to the book now. I'm reading from the book, page 81. Most slave children were prohibited from learning to read or write. But if you were ever given a chance to do so, the Bible was the book to read. That's the only book that they allowed us to read in slavery, the Bible. I'm continuing reading now. Some masters and mistresses would even read Bible tales to their slaves, you see. So they wanted to be sure that we got a whole lot of Bible from the European perspective. Now, I don't mean the pure Bible and the pure liberation theology and the theology of black people, but they were trying to get the Bible into the minds of our people that was going to control our minds and to make us better slaves. Now, back to the book. Sometimes I editorialize and I come out of the book. I like to let you know when I'm coming back. I'm reading back from the book. My book, Recapturing the African Mind. Tremendous care was taken in the selection of biblical scriptures that could be read to the slaves. They chose certain scriptures that they would read to the slaves. Now back to the book again. There could be no scripture references by missionaries or slave preachers to Pharaoh or Moses. Any idea about freedom was not to enter the minds of the slaves at any cost. Let me read that again from my book. Any idea about freedom was not to enter the minds of the slaves at any cost. They did not want us to hear anything about being free. They didn't want us to hear the story of Pharaoh and Moses, about how Moses went to Pharaoh and said, "Let my people go." They didn't want us to even think about being free. They wanted us to just have the kind of teaching from the scriptures of the Bible that they could use as a mechanism to control us as a people. Okay, now, I'm reading in the book again. Slave camp meetings or church sessions were closely monitored by the masters or overseers. Upon discovery of rule violations, masters would design punishment for slaves. What I'm saying here is that if we violated any of the rules, we would be punished, and they would monitor us and look at what we were doing and listen to what we were saying so they could stay in control. Back to the book again. The most popular sermons given by preachers, both white and black, and I'm saying this because you have to realize that black preachers were trained by white preachers. That's why we thank God for Shaw University. We thank God for black theological seminaries in this country that preach liberation theology. Okay, the most popular sermon, were those based upon the following themes. The most popular sermons, as I'm reading here, were those based upon popular themes. Number one, obedience to the master. Number two, loyalty to the master. I think somebody's called my other phone, but I wish they would listen to their message, and then they would know what to do. Whoever it is, call me on my other phone, 252. Listen to your message, and then you'll know what to do. All right, I'm back again. Some of the popular themes were obedience to the master. Another theme was loyalty to the master. And another theme was theft. Another was love your enemies. Another popular theme was do good to those who spitefully use you. And another one was reward after death. And another popular sermon was peaceful suffering and themes of guilt. These are the kinds of sermons that we as people heard. These are the kinds of sermons that we as people heard when we were when we were in the slave community, as John Blessingame talks about, in the slave community. We were in the slave community, and I have an example here of a sermon, and I want to, as I said before, I want to talk about some of the sermons and some of the preachings and teachings that we had on the plantations or in the slave community to take our minds, to rob us of our abilities to think. Now, from a book called Incidents in the Life of a Slave Girl, there's a story about a lady by the name Linda Brent, who was born a slave, and she later became a slave fugitive. And she talks about a reverend by the name of Reverend Pike and what he taught the slaves. And this is a white minister. Now, I want to read just a little bit of this sermon from the slave community from some plantation in Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Alabama, Mississippi. But the minister starts like this. Now, I want you to think about those six things that I mentioned before, seven things that I mentioned before that were the popular sermons, how they come out in this sermon. This is what the white minister was saying to the slaves. Hearken, ye servants, give strict heed unto my words. You are rebellious sinners. Your hearts are filled with all manner of evil. 'Tis the devil who tempts you. Listen now, this is what our people who were slaves in the community were listening to, coming from a white preacher. I mean, I want you to really think about this. This is what was being said. It says that God is angry with you and will surely punish you if you don't forsake your wicked ways. Listen now. You that live in town are eye servants behind your master's back. Instead of serving your masters faithfully, which is pleasing in the sight of your heavenly master, you are idle. You shirk your work. God sees you. This is what the white preacher is telling the black slaves now. I'm reading now. He said, God sees you. You tell lies. God hears you. Instead of being engaged in worshiping him, you are hidden away somewhere, feasting on your master's substance, tossing coffee grounds with some wicked fortune teller, or cutting cards with another old hag. Your masters may not find you out, But God sees you and will punish you. I want y'all to listen to this now. Listen to what is going into the minds of the slave now. He said he's the slave master preacher is saying that God sees you and will punish you. Oh, the depravity of your hearts. When your master's work is done, are you quieted together, thinking of the goodness of God in such sinful creatures? No, you are quarreling and tying up little bags of roots to bury under the doorstep to poison each other with. God sees you. You men steal away to every grog shop to sell your master's corn that you may buy rum to drink. God sees you. You sneak into the back streets or among the bushes to pitch coppers or pennies, to pitch coppers, although your masters may not find you out. Oh, this is something. God sees you, and he will punish you. You must forsake your sinful ways and be faithful servants. Listen, brothers and sisters who are tuned in today to the African American Empowerment Program. I'm reading a sermon by a white preacher to black people on the slave plantation. He says, you must forsake your sinful ways and be faithful servants. Obey your old master and your young master, your old mistress and your young mistress. In other words, he said, obey all your masters, the white ones, white men masters, the white female mistresses. Then it goes back, I'm back into the sermon now. He said, if you obey your earthly master, if you disobey your earthly master, you offend your heavenly master. Now, what's he saying here? He's saying if you disobey him as your slave master, you're offending God. So you know that you don't want to offend God. So what would the slave do? He's going to obey the earthly master so that he can be in the favor of God. Listen to the psychology, brothers and sisters. To those who are tuned in to the program this afternoon, and I hope you're listening, this is a psychology that has stuck with us even today. We believe that if we offend white folks, we are offending God. Get away from that kind of teaching. Cast it out of your minds. Let's free our minds today and begin to think for ourselves. I'm back to the sermon now. I want to read that one again. The master says, if you disobey your earthly master, you offend your heavenly master. You must obey God's commandments. When you go from here, don't stop at the corners of the streets to talk, but go directly home and let your master and mistress see that you have come. And that's from a book called Incidents in the Life of a Slave Girl by Linda Brent, page 70 through 71. You see, so that was an example of a sermon that some of the slaves were hearing on the plantation. And that particular sermon was a sermon that spoke about, I'm going back over those six themes that I talked about earlier. In that sermon, you can hear theme number one, disobedience to the master. Number two, loyalty to the master. Number three, theft. He talked about in that sermon, the white preacher talked about if you steal from white people, theft. Love your enemies was discussed. Do good to those who spitefully use you was also discussed in the sermon. And your reward after death, which was number six of those seven things, that was discussed in the sermon. And number seven, peaceful suffering was discussed in the sermon, and also themes of guilt. They made us feel guilty when we walked out of a store and forgot to pay for something, so guilty that we go back in the store and pay for it. Now, I'm not going to get into all that right now, but black folk began to think about the situation that we're in here as a people and how much that we have learned and been taught in the church by not just the white preacher, because it was passed down to the black preacher. Look at how it has been mechanisms with an S of control for us as a people. Now, I'm back to my book on page 83. It was fed thoroughly into the minds of slaves that it was indeed the will of God that they not only occupy their lowly positions, but that they also maintain those positions for life. A tremendous offense to God would be a recalcitrant slave, and that means a disobedient. A tremendous offense to God would be a disobedient slave. Now, so if you think you're offending God by being disobedient, then you're going to be obedient to your master because you don't want to offend God. You see, I'm going on. Impotence and outspokenness to the master would also be disliked by God. Much of this kind of thinking can still be found among, I mean, can be found operating in the minds of African people in the world today. So then I go on to talk about some of the sermons that another sermon that was preached by a slave master during the time of slavery about correction and how God is going to correct you. And I'm going to read just a bit of this one to show how Reverend Meade, in this particular case, is set out below to give the reader a good understanding of how the slave masters, through the voices of white Christian ministers, and I say in parentheses here, who themselves may have owned slaves, because many of the Christian ministers, the so-called Christian people, were slaveholders, as many of the presidents in the United States of America were slaveholders. Many of them, that's another story, you see. So slavery was part and parcel of the whole fabric of America. Slavery was, no matter who you were, if you were a white person and could afford to, then you're going to have some slaves. And not just white people, which is another story. There were black men who were slave masters and slaveholders among other black people in America. That's another lecture for another time, but we have to be honest about our history, and I'm just telling you what is historically true. But Reverend Meade, in a sermon that he gave to his congregation about the control of the minds of the slaves, he was saying that slaves should accept what he calls correction. Correction. Okay. Now, I'm reading just a little bit of this sermon, and this particular sermon is from a book called American Negro Slave Revolts, page 57, by Herbert Aptheker. Herbert Aptheker. And I'm mentioning this because this information I have in my book is from many sources, much research. It's not like I'm making it up, and nobody has said it before me. I'm just trying to bring it to the masses of our people here today on the African American Empowerment Program. But this one is from American Negro Slave Revolts by Herbert Aptheker, page 57, and it's a sermon that a preacher preached about correction. And he says, there's only one circumstance which may appear grievous that I shall now take notice of, and this is correction. Now, when correction is given you, you either deserve it or you do not deserve it. But whether you deserve it or not, listen now what he's saying, brothers and sisters. I can't hardly even read this. I mean, I wrote it. This is in my book. He said, but whether you deserve it or not, it is your duty, and Almighty God requires that you bear this correction patiently. You may perhaps think that it is a hard doctrine, but if you consider it rightly, you must think, you must otherwise think about it. He says, suppose then that you deserve correction. You cannot but say that it is just and right. You should meet with it. Suppose you do not, or at least you do not deserve so much or severe a correction for the fault you have committed, you perhaps have escaped a great many more and are at last paid for it. Or suppose you are quite innocent of what is laid to your charge and suffer wrongfully in that particular thing. Is it not possible that you have done some other bad which was never discovered? Lord have mercy. And that Almighty God who saw you doing it would not let you escape without punishment at one time or another? And ought you not in such a case give glory to him and be thankful that he would rather punish you in this life for your wickedness than destroy your soul for it in the next life? I'm away from the book for a minute, brothers and sisters. Now, he's saying that you should be thankful to be corrected by your slave master. Now, I want y'all to think about we as a people today and how we act, how we conduct ourselves, how we stand when it comes to speaking truth to power, standing up to our white masters. And when I say our white masters, I'm talking about your white boss on your job, your black boss on your job. When you stand up to your supervisor, do you stand up or do you just bow down as you were taught in slavery? Because many of the actions that we are involved in today are really directly related to what happened to us on the plantation. He says, be thankful that he would rather punish you in this life for your wickedness than destroy your soul for it in the next life. Back to the book now. But suppose that even this was not the case, a case harder to be imagined, and that you have by no means, known or unknown, deserved the correction you suffered. There's this great comfort in it. Now listen now, he's saying there's comfort in this correction, that if you bear it patiently and leave your cause in the hands of the Lord, he will reward you for it in heaven, and the punishment you suffer unjustly here shall turn to your exceedingly great glory hereafter. Brothers and sisters, think about this. He's saying that you will be rewarded for the punishment you receive today. So enjoy this punishment, the white people. Enjoy the fact that we have no money. Enjoy the fact that your lights are turned off. Enjoy the fact that you are suffering and going through trials and tribulations, because you're going to be rewarded for it in heaven. Don't worry about today. You get your reward in heaven. This is from a sermon called Correction that was preached to the slaves. Now, I'm going to take about maybe 5 to 7 more minutes before we open up our lines. And I want to continue here for a minute. Page 85 of my book. An excellent way to understand the impact of religion and education on the minds of Africans during slavery is to study what the slaves themselves have said about the subject. Now, the sermon I read about correction, and the other sermon that I read earlier, those two sermons, they were from white ministers. Now, I'm going to read a couple of statements that were made by slaves themselves in my research, and what they said about going to church, what the slaves did. Now, here's a sister by the name of Sarah Douglas. And Sarah Douglas says, we went, and I'm reading it just like we used to speak. And brothers and sisters, make it very clear that it is not absolutely necessary that we always speak and project ourselves orally just like white folk. We don't have to do that. We are the originators of language. We brought language to the earth. We were the first people to speak and to utter speech. So we don't have to just completely talk like white folk. In other words, let me just say it like it is. We don't have to just talk like white folk all the time. A lot of times today, because we have education, we look down upon our brothers and sisters because they may not say it in the same way that it's taught to say it in English 101. The subject and the verb might not necessarily agree. The adverb might not really qualify the verb, and there's not a preposition at the end of the phrase and all the stuff that we were taught. We know all this stuff, but it's not necessary when we're dealing with each other to have to abide by all their rules and regulations. Now, we know it, and when we're in certain situations in the world, we know when to use it and when not. But if I'm talking to you as a brother or a sister, you know, don't get on me because I might say ain't, or I might not have subject and the verb in exact agreement. It might be a little off in my sentence structure. Don't chastise me for that, because that's a form of control that we were taught on the plantation. We were taught to act and think and do, project and conduct ourselves just like the slave master wanted us to do. And if we're going to become free people, we can realize that we can step out of the box and be ourselves, which is another lecture for another time. But Sister Sarah Douglas, and I'm saying this because of the way she said the things here in her statement about the church. He says, we went to the white folks' church, so we sit in the back on the floor, she says. They allowed us to join their church whenever one got ready to join or felt that the Lord had forgiven him of his sins. We told our determination This is what we said. I feel that the Lord has forgiven me for my sins. I pray and I feel I'm a better girl. We're always boys and girls. She said, I feel I'm a better girl, never men and women. I feel I'm a better girl. Then Sister Sarah says, I belong to Master so-and-so, and I'm so old. The white preacher would then ask our miss and master what they thought about it, and they could see any change. They would get up and say, I notice she don't steal, and I notice she don't lie as much, and I notice she works better. Then they let us join. We served our mistress and master in slavery and not God. That's from Sarah Douglas. I want to repeat her last statement. She says that they would let them join the church after someone on the plantation would say, I notice she don't lie as much, and I notice she works better. Then they let us join. We served our mistress and master in slavery and not God. I want y'all to think about it. We were supposedly serving God, but we were serving the white mistress and the white master in slavery. Now I'm going to give another statement, sister by the name of Alice Sewell, and what she said about slavery. And I'm just about to close it out for today because we want to go to the phone lines, and I think we probably got some people on. But from Sister Alice Sewell, now she says, they did allow us to go to church on Sunday, about 2 miles down the public road, and they hired a white preacher to preach to us. He never did tell us nothing but be good servants, pick up old moss and old miss things about the place, and don't steal no chickens or pigs, and don't lie about nothing. Then they baptize you and call that you got religion. Never did say nothing about a slave dying and going to heaven. When we die, they bury us next day, and you is just like any of the cattle on the place. That's all tis to it, and all tis of you. You is just dead, that's all. That's from Sister Alice Sewell, and what she, her reflections on what the way we were taught in the church. And then I have one more I want to read here from Jack White. I want to read one from my brother. Jack White says, Master preached to the white folks Sunday morning. Then at night, all the masters around that country send their slaves and be preached to us. He had two favorite texts he used to preach from to the slaves. One was, servants, obey your masters. He didn't say much about the masters in heaven, but always told us to obey our earthly masters. The other text was, thou shalt not steal. He preached that over and over to the niggers. They couldn't read their Bibles, so they had to believe just what he say. Since I've got reading and studying, I see some of the churches is wrong, and the preachers don't preach just like the Bible say. That's a good one for us to end on, and I want you to think about your churches today. Are your churches really preaching what the Bible say or what white folks say? Now, as I end for today, I want to mention how important the Bible was. Now, this is me talking. This is not from my book. But when I was in Harare, which is the capital city of Zimbabwe, a country in southern Africa, Zimbabwe, the country that was ruled by Robert Mugabe, the freedom fighter, for several years before his death a few years ago. But when I was in Zimbabwe, its capital city of Harare, I went around downtown and I went into a bookstore. And I noticed that in the bookstore, they had more Bibles in the bookstore than anything else. And not only did they just have the Bible in English, because people in Zimbabwe speak the English language, but they also had the Bible translated in the language of Ndebele. Ndebele. Now, I'm going to spell that because some people might want to look it up. The Bible was translated into Ndebele. N-D-E-B-E-L-E. N-D-B-E-L-E. Something like that. Ndebele. I'm not thinking right now about it. But anyway, Ndebele is an African language that was spoken by many black people, Africans in southern Africa. So the Bible was translated into their language so that they could read the Bible. Think about it. Wonder why they did that. Now, I'm reading from my book here. Now, let me just take a look at, there's a book called Pilgrim's Progress that I talk about on page 92 of my book. And this book was written by a man by the name of John Bunyan. And that book has been translated into over 100 languages, Pilgrim Progress has, and has been used to colonize the minds of black people. The only other book translated into more languages than Pilgrim's Progress by John Bunyan is a book called The Bible. The only other book, I repeat, translated into more languages than Pilgrim's Progress by John Bunyan is the Bible. Now, according to a writer by the name of Nana Batekwa, he says, and I'm quoting him, in his book called 500 Years of European Behavior and Its Effect on Africa and African People. His book is called 500 Years of European Behavior and Its Effect on Africa and African People. And in his book, he says, I'm quoting the brother from his book, which is my last statement before we let Brother Marvin go back and open up for some questions for our last 30 minutes. But brother says in his book, in order to get to the African mind, Europeans began to translate the Bible into African languages. And by 1876, some portion of the Bible had been translated into 50 languages. The whole Bible was translated into 7 languages and the New Testament into 9 languages. By 1926, the translation had grown to 244. After the first 50 years, the breakdown was as follows, and I want you to listen to this. After the first 50 years, the breakdown of the Bible being translated was broken down this way. 28 complete versions of the Bible, 59 New Testaments, some books in 138 languages, and some selected passages in 19 more. In other words, since 1876, 194 Bible translations had occurred. So with that statement, why is it that that's the only book that they would let us read on the plantations? And why is it that they didn't want us to read about the liberation theology that's in the Bible? Why is that? We need to think about it and understand that the Bible had been used during slavery as a mechanism of control, but the Bible came from black people. The King James Version was translated by an African ancestral man by the name of King James, which we can talk about later, but it was tampered with, manipulated, and given to us in another form that would make us slaves, but it is our book. Brother Marvin, back to you.
Dr. Bruce, thank you. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. We're talking religion, history, culture, and education. Dr. Bruce just laid it down. Thank you, sir, for a wonderful lecture. I do want to just reach out to our people who are not familiar with the history, is that's why we're here, for education. It might not feel good going in, but it's good for you. It might not feel good going down initially, but it's good for you because knowledge is power. Now, again, we're not knocking the Bible. We're not knocking Christianity, but we're talking about what happened to our people and the conditioning, right? And we're still conditioned. And we have to understand how powerful that conditioning is that continue to lead us down the path of destruction. We're talking about, for example, recapturing the African mind. We have to do that. Brother George, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am. Can you hear me? Brother Marvin.
Yes, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Dr. Bruce, Brother George. We got into it today. Dr. Bruce, you went in deep today. So let's, before we get to the callers, right, let's just I want to say, and I hate to be this way, but soften the blow for some of our listeners who are hearing this for the first time. And Dr. Bruce specifically, tell them why this message in this chapter is so important to our liberation.
It's so important, Brother Marvin, before we go to our phone calls, because these are the kinds of things that we were taught on the plantations of America, and these are the kinds of things that many of us still believe even unto this day. And many of these teachings of obedience, of about theft, about guilt, and feeling guilty about certain kinds of things, and these feelings that we have of being loyal and being obedient, and the fact that we'll be chastised if we stand up against the master or speak out in the system, we have to understand what happened to us so we can destroy this kind of thinking and become a better people today and become a stronger people, and then we can begin to stand up and fight for the liberation of our people. The churches on Sunday should be, and not just Sunday, but I say Sunday because that's the main day, but the churches should be a place where black people should go and be taught and receive teachings of liberation, self-esteem, to think good about themselves, and to understand that they are human beings too, and that we are loved by God, and we are not loved by God when we don't stand up and speak for ourselves. We have to stand up and speak up for ourselves as a people. We have to do that. All right, let's go to the phone line, Brother Mom. We got any calls on the line?
All right. Yes, sir. We got them loaded up. All right. I'm going to just do a little bit, Dr. Bruce. Hope you don't mind. Just a little bit.
Okay. We want them to be brief, too, if you got a lot of them.
Yeah.
Right.
Let us know where you're calling from. All right. We're going to start with 8502. 8502. It's the African American Empowerment Hour with Dr. Bruce. We just had a powerful lecture. Do you have a question or comment? Where are you calling from? 8502.
Yes, good afternoon. This is Herbert White. I'm calling from North Carolina.
Hey, Brother
and
Herbert.
I just want to say how important the teachings from Dr. Bruce Bridges is. It's important how we get information. So Bridges is a master teacher, but his most important quality is he's a master unteacher. Because if you don't remove all of that information that's already been supplanted in us, then when you give us this good information, we're just going to reject it.
Mm-hmm.
So Dr. Bridges is able to surgically and stealthily remove those misinformation, that wrong information, so that we don't reject the good information when we hear it.
I like that, brother. I like that. Dr. Bruce, you there? Dr. Bruce is doing surgery. He's cutting out.
I'm right here. I'm listening to the calls. I'm glad to hear him too. Right. Good call.
Cut
good
it
call.
Out. Surgery. Thank you, brother. Let's go on down to 4740. You're on live. Thank you for the call, brother. 4740, you're live on the Empowerment Hour. Dr. Bruce, do you have a question or comment? All right, let's go down to 7905. 7905.
Yes. Yes, I enjoyed Dr. Bruce's teaching. I enjoyed every bit of it. We are in a different position now. People of color, they are not listening to the masters, white, black. It doesn't matter. On the jobs, our people, their people, they don't want to work anymore. They don't want to learn anymore. I agree. It starts at home and the church. The generation now, they're known as the generation that do not care. So the question is, how do we get their attention?
All right. Thank you, sister. Thank you, sister. Dr. Bruce, how do we get their attention? Thank you, sister.
And you know, I'm glad you mentioned that too, brother Marvin, because I was talking to a sister, and hopefully she's on, a sister who's going to, she's a student at the, Shaw University, DaVinci School, I think, and we were talking, and she was just speaking about how when it comes to violence in the black community and all the guns that we have and gunplay that goes on, how... And I think that's one reason that the church doesn't attract young people, if I'm correct. Maybe somebody who knows more about me, but I don't think the church is attracting young people as much as they once were, because when we grew up, we felt that that's what we had to do. Our parents made us go. But now it's a whole different environment. So I think we have to restructure our sermons, our lectures, our discussions, and try to attract our people and to go into actually, I think it would be excellent I'm a little sorry that especially the Nation of Islam is not as active in most cities, as far as I know, that I can see, as they once were, going into the communities, teaching people and setting up seminars and lectures and that kind of thing. But anyway, I was talking to a sister. We were talking about the mayor in the city of Durham and how she needs help, and we have some ideas, some things that we're going to try to approach her with in this city. But the people have to be taught. Okay, Brother Mike, let's go to another one.
All right. Let's go down to 4541. 4541. You're on live. Do you have a question or comment for Dr. Bruce?
Yes, I really enjoyed the lecture. I just wanted to say that what Brother Bruce was describing, being taught on plantations, I hear some very similar sermons growing up in Durham. And the party talked about correction. I just wanted to say, I remember seeing on PBS about Dizzy Gillespie, whose father was a preacher, and gave him a whipping every Sunday, whether he had done anything or not. And also wanted to say, if you have the time, could you speak just a little more about King James Stewart?
You know, I can just briefly about King James, but because that's another lecture, and the brother who will call in, he knows I'm working on some things, but I will briefly, but before I go to King James, I appreciate the information because I didn't know that about Dizzy Gillespie, but it makes me think about when we were growing up myself, sometimes when my mother would get the belt, she would start, and some of y'all who are tuned in have done it, or have had it done to you, they pull the strap out or the belt and she, or the switches, and she say, I'm beating you for old and new, for what you might have done and didn't get whipped for, and I'm whipping you for what you did this time. And it's the same thing that the masters were doing on the plantation when they whipped us, you know, which is what I just read. You know, God sees you. You might not think God sees you, but I'm taking care of what you may have done. Anyway, so I wanted to thank the call for that, but King James, Lord have mercy. Brothers and sisters, when we begin to study our history is not just made, and I'm glad the brother mentioned it, because when you were talking, Brother Marvin, and you were absolutely correct when you mentioned something about us coming over on the slave ships onto the plantations of America, but there were many of us who came here. Well, first of all, as we know, the history shows us there were many of us who were already here, the Aboriginal people. From the whole aboriginal people of the earth are black people. And when I say aboriginal, to those who may not know, because I like to teach and make it clear, aboriginal means, ab means from, as Malcolm used to teach, prefix ab means from, and original means a beginning. So the original people are the first people on any part of this earth that water touches land were black people. The original inhabitants of this country was not a man who was the red man, as we've been taught, but it was black people on this so-called America. Black people in Central America. Black people were the original people in South America. Black people were the original Olmec, Aztecs, and we were the first people here. So anyway, but King James, and I'm going to stop this because the brother got me into something that he shouldn't have done because I'm going to forgive him for it. But King James, we have found from doing our research, was a black man who was from Scotland. And at one time, King James ruled Scotland, King James the VI in Scotland. And he was also King James the I of England, a black man. And he came from those early people in the island of Scotland and Wales and Ireland and England who were called the Cymry people, C-M-Y-R. The Cooey people, and also the people who were called the Twa. Our people were the first people in these lands, and we sat on the thrones as kings and queens, but we have never been taught that. And not only have we not been taught in the schools, but I say this, and I say it very straightforward and forthrightly, many of our scholars have not taught us this history about the kings and queens of Queen Elizabeth and Queen Victoria and Anne Boleyn and King Arthur and all these people who were black people in Scotland who had the names like MacDuffie and MacDowell and MacKinnon and MacIver and all these names. One day, that's another lecture I'm working on, don't want to go into it now, but King James, he also translated some wrote other books other than the Bible, but that's enough on King James right now. That's not what we're talking about, but I did want to throw that out and let you, Brother Marvin, go back. See, you get me started. See, okay.
All right.
I'm quiet.
All right. It's education, Dr. Bruce. Give it to him while you can. Give it to him while you can. 1688, you're up next. You're live on the Empowerment Hour. Dr. Bruce, Brother George, you got a question or comment. Where you calling from? 1688.
They don't
want
to talk to us.
They don't want to talk to us, 1688. It's okay. We love you. But at least you're on the line. Educate yourself. Knowledge is power. All right, let's go down to 40. Oh, did I do 45, 41?
Yes.
All right. I'm going down to 7487. 7487. See if we could get you in on the line. Hold on 1 second, guys. Okay, here we go. 7487. You're live with Dr. Bruce. Do you have a question or comment? 7487. All right, let's move right on down to 1295. 1295, you're live and in color.
Peace.
On Empowerment
Peace,
Saturday.
Brother.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm well. How are you, sir?
Doing
well.
Yeah, this is thank
Brother
you for Smith. Your call.
Thank you for having the show, and thank you for taking my call.
Hey, Brother.
Brother Khalil again called from California. Dr. Bruce, you got me, bro. Like I'm a fan, okay? Let me just go ahead and put
That's right. You're the brother who called a few weeks ago when I was on. I think you mentioned that you were surprised you hadn't heard of me and you were going to try to get me out to California. Wasn't that you? You had a few weeks ago, a few months ago, maybe.
No, sir. That wasn't me.
Okay.
I was on last. But
I remember you now. Yeah, you were on because we the program was about to go off and you were making a long comment. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah. I apologize for that. But this is the first time I was able to, you know, get on in the beginning because I'm usually busy at this time, and this was a blessing that I was able to get on and catch Brother George and the entire call, you know. But yeah, I have to confess, I had never read your book. I've heard it a couple of times. I didn't know it was you, but you know, this weekend I will begin. I just looked on Amazon, and I definitely
let me give you my number so you can get it directly from me. You got a pen? I'm going to give you my number.
Yep, I sure do.
All right,
919-956-956.
5972 to this brother Khalil from California, for anybody who wants to order my book, 919-956-5972. I'll be glad to put one in the mail to you, Brother Khalil, and so you can get one.
That's right.
I hope you enjoyed the program today.
Do not call Amazon.
Right.
Call Dr. Bruce.
They don't want to have
Amazon.
They don't want the people to have a union.
That's a show disclaimer. 919-956-5972. Go ahead, brother.
Yes, sir. 956 5972. Call directly to the store and get your book.
Like sir, if you don't, if you don't leave me a message and I'll call you back. Just leave me a message with your phone number and I'll call you back.
Absolutely, will do. Yes, sir. So, quick before my mind lose, the two things I wanted to mention. First, thank you so much for mentioning the fact that our people were already here. We, you know, some people were here and were never didn't come over on the so-called slave ships. We were already here, and I think we should make sure when we talk about, you know, recapturing the African mind that we mention that piece too. That's very important history that is not taught a lot. But thank you for mentioning that. Not just mentioning it, but driving that home the way you did. Performing surgery like the previous caller just said on how you did that. And also how you talked about how, you know, wish that the Muslims were still going through the communities because our people have to be taught. And I want to mention that in conjunction with what you said, how Brother George, which I love to keep calling my brother Akeem, you know, got you going when he talked with his talking and talked about how we need to be addressing people. I so much going on in my head, I lose it really quick. But Brother George got you going with his talk about how we need to make sure that how we're moving and working with each other. Oh yeah, thank you, came back. Thank you, God. On how we move and talk about, you know, unifying, but also in being able to. And Brother Marvin and I talked about this. I felt good about it. I said, Brother Marvin, we on it, bro. When this brother, Dr. Bruce mentioned it, hey, we on it, Marvin, okay? Because we talked about one time how we need to make sure that we're qualifying each other and putting each other, giving each other opportunities where best suits their strengths, so to speak. You know, and when we're talking about leadership and unifying, you know, we need to be, I think, thinking about more of a group leadership than a one leadership. Like Brother King said, you know, we don't want to do it my way. We don't want to do it. You know, we got to get away from that, you know. And I think we need to have these type of sessions with Dr. Bruce, Mom, and George, where we can move more into how we get the work done. And that's why I said all that backdrop to get at that, you know, because we do have to teach our people. And I think, you know, the ability to unify, that's a missing art. Like, we don't really know how to do that. Yeah, the Muslims have a really good plan, and I think that would be a really good one that we can implement. But how we actually come together, recognize each other, you know, and have a group mindset of leadership as opposed to one leader. And you lead at different points. When we come to the fact of banking, you shop at that. Okay, brother, you take lead. When we come to, you know, history and where it applies. Okay, brother, you shop at that. So we shift the leadership. I think we should have some courses and some dialogue as to how we do that. That's all. That's what I'm saying.
Right. That's good. That's good. Very good. I agree with that, brother. 100%, brother Marvin. I agree with that. That's like I said. That's about like my King. That's another program that we could talk about, leadership. Right.
Absolutely. You know, we have a desperate need for sound leadership. We do. And you heard from Dr. Bruce today, the system was put in place to destroy our leadership. Right? So we got to do a better job of putting those who are best equipped to lead our people, who have a mind and a heart for our people. Let's go back to the lines, Dr. Bruce. All right, let's go over to 9619. 9619, you're live. Do you have a question or comment for Dr. Bruce?
Most definitely. Thank you so much for taking the call, and thank you, Dr. Bruce Bridges, for being there.
You're welcome, sir.
Your book is a universal key to help unlocking these issues, and you bring about what Azebo talked about with that African psychology. And my question is this: is this addiction that we're dealing with when we're dealing with a non-African mind, or out of our African minds, because literally we're out of our minds? Is this an addiction that needs a 12-step program? Mm-hmm. And how do we apply the African psychology and create these institutions that are Afrocentric? And how did you do it? How did you maintain your Afrocentric mind going through the alabaster institutions that you had to deal with?
Okay, good question, brother. One thing that happened to me, which is
Oh, good. Okay, I thought I might have my mute on. One thing that happened to me, brother, and I'm glad you asked that question, that is when I was young in Durham, North Carolina, during the time of the Civil Rights Movement, I became very active in the Civil Rights Movement in Durham. And in becoming active in boycotting and passing out flyers in front of the stores in downtown Durham, and I called a couple of the Civil Rights people in Durham, and hopefully that might have tuned in, and you might get a chance to get to them. But anyway, I worked at that at an early age, and so I came up in a climate where people were questioning. H. Rap Brown was on the scene. Stokely Carmichael was on the scene. Huey P. Newton was on the scene. Angela Davis was on the scene. Louis Farrakhan was on the scene. Malcolm was gone by the time. I don't really remember Malcolm, but there was this was the climate. This was the environment. And so that was an environment of questioning everything. And so as you begin to question and use your analytical mind, we talked about the word last week, your analytical mind, as we talked about, you begin to question everything. And what you do is you eventually grow and develop and want to know more and more and more. And then what's going to happen is the more knowledge you get or the more awareness you acquire, you're going to have to put that knowledge and awareness into action. And that's what begins to change us as a people. And this is why, back to our subject today, this is why European people or white people, those who may not know what I'm talking about, just to make sure everybody's on the same page, when European or white people taught us on the plantation, they wanted us not to hear anything about freedom, didn't want to hear anything about Moses and the Pharaoh or anything about asking questions, just accept everything that they said. Because once you get knowledge, you start to question. And one thing, too, and I'm going to let you get back to your callers, but one thing, too, I remember when I was on the radio, I used to do a radio talk show in Durham, North Carolina for several years, and I would say on my talk show sometimes, I would tell our listeners, I would say, go to church tomorrow morning and ask your pastor where Easter came from. Go to church and ask him questions. I had people questioning, and some people don't like for you to ask them questions because really sometimes they don't know the answer, you see. And so when you begin to question as a person, then you'll begin to, one thing leads to another. You question small things, bigger things, then you begin to question your mother, your father, the church, your community, your teacher at school, then the teacher at school, then the teacher in college, and then you begin to question the system, and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And so the whole belief system of lies and falsehood becomes destroyed when people ask questions that cannot be answered. Okay.
All right. Great job, Dr. Bruce. We're going to 9266. 9266, you're alive. You have a question or comment for Dr. Bruce.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you, Dr. Bruce, for the lecture today. This is so informative, insightful, as usual. But you asked earlier what they are taught in your churches. And it made me remember my mom going to a Bible study, and this was like within the past 10 years. It was fairly recent. And I remember the guy who was, and it was a senior Bible study, and the guy who was teaching the Bible study, who was a black man, was telling them that we are all dumb sheep. And I figured to myself, we need to get away from this. I said, Mama, that is not good. We are not dumb sheep. Because he was teaching the older people that we were dumb sheep that needed to be led by a shepherd. And I thought we really need to get away from teaching our people this because we are not dumb sheep. So it was
right.
Still,
right. We were given our minds by the Creator to use our minds to ask questions,
right,
to analyze, to synthesize, and to observe everything around us. So we're not dumb sheep. We were given a mind, the Creator gave us a mind to use, and we as people need to use our minds.
Correct, and it's sad that there are still churches out here that teach that.
Right, right. Brother Marvin, let me ask you a question. Do you have have a call from 7905, do you?
Let me look, but let me thank the sister for calling. Thank you, sister, for calling. Great comment. Let me see. In the meantime, Dr. Bruce, let me get down the line because we got a couple more to go. Let's see. Let's go to 6337. And then let me get that number again, Dr. Bruce.
7905.
All right. Let me go to 6337 first. 6337, are you there? 6337. All right. Let's go down to 9116. 9116.
Yeah, no comment.
Just listen, I guess, huh?
All right.
Yeah, no
comment. 9067. Okay. All right. Thank you for calling, brother. 9067. Trying to get you in before we get out of here. 9067.
Dr. Lafayette Maxwell. Just want to say that I can hear all
my brother,
my brother. Great teacher, and I always enjoy what he does, and a great lesson, Doc.
Doc, I'm glad you got my text, and I'm working on Brother Marvin to have you as a guest one day to talk about James Cone and liberation theology.
Whoa. Right. All right.
That's a good professor, Brother Marvin, from Shaw University, and he'd be a good follow-up when we, as a matter of fact, for this chapter, we'll talk about that because liberation theology would be good. He can handle that better than me.
All right. All right. Do you have a comment, Dr. Lafayette?
Yes, did you hear me? Hello?
Yes.
No, we couldn't hear you too good. Go ahead and repeat it.
Well, I'll just say I just enjoy always listening to Dr. Bridges and his teaching, and especially today, talking about how people just misinterpret the Bible and Scripture and try to keep us down. And I just thank God for his wisdom and knowledge to open our mind up in this classroom of learning and sharing with others.
All right. Thank you so much for calling. All right, Dr. Bruce, we're right at the end. And we got, this has been a great time, so we'd like to give final comments for you and Dr. George before we wrap up. Dr. Bruce, final comment.
Oh, I'd just like to say that we as people need to recapture our minds and begin to think and use our God-given ability to think for ourselves, and usually thought turns into action and begin to do for self.
All right. Dr. George.
Yes, sir. What I would like to do is just tell everyone that's on the line, tell someone about the show, because this is some great information that's being disseminated to our people. And, you know, I think that Brother Marvin, Dr. Bridges, Dr. Rogers are doing a great job of reeducating our African minds.
All right. Thank you, Brother George. And thank you so much, Dr. Bruce. It's work that needs to be done. And you're the one. You are the one. If you're on the line, you're the one that can begin to assist and support the work that needs to be done. We need great leadership. We need you. We need you to call your friends, your relatives, and say, hey, there's a platform and others that we're connected to that is educated and empowering our people to become better. There is nothing wrong with one, telling the truth, two, understanding that truth, three, applying that truth. Dr. Bruce gave us some themes today that we really need to think about. But again, it's up to us to do the work of correcting, right? Brother Stan used to say, correction for direction. We have to take a new course now, and it's going to be up to us to lead and guide ourselves. That day is over for following others. It's time to follow ourselves through good leadership and excellent followership. Join us again next week. I think we'll have Dr. Rogers back on next week to continue our series over there with the Carter G. Woodson series, right? And so that, again, is being able to understand what
went on and what we need to do. So we continue to educate and empower our people. Call someone, tell someone there's some great work being done for African Americans and African American empowerment. We'll talk to you next week. Continue to call. Continue to become the best that you can be.
Gone
peace
and covered with scars, still strong with his last ounce of courage to reach, oh, to reach the unreachable.
Can do it. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.